Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, April 6th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A crisis in Zimbabwe coalition says it is planning to offer a reward of $2,000 to anyone with information on the whereabouts of public protest leader Itai Dzamara, who was allegedly abducted by unknown assailants a month ago.
We have decided to take this route on the basis that at times people are afraid of being victimized when they release particular information that is delicate and sensitive.
Tensions are simmering in the ruling ZANU-PF party, with some party hawks now pushing for the arrest of expelled former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and putting strict surveillance of her alleged allies in the party.
There's simply not found anything to speak on to Joyce, the wife of the late general. That's something which is plausible, that's something which is acceptable to the public.
And bond coins that were rejected by some local people soon after being introduced in Zimbabwe have brought a lot of joy in the country's Chinoy town. A crisis in Zimbabwe coalition says it is planning to offer a reward of $2,000 to anyone with information on the whereabouts of public protest leader Itai Dzamara, who was allegedly abducted by unknown assailants a month ago. Crisis Programs Manager Nixon Nyekadzino says the offer is meant to encourage Zimbabweans to release information about Dzamara's alleged abduction in Glenview suburb in Harare. Nyekadzino says local people should not be afraid of being victimized, as the informant will be protected accordingly. Dzamara led a group known as Occupy Africa Unity Square, which was calling for the resignation of President Robert Mugabe. Nyekadzino tells Studio 7 they will soon stage public protests to put pressure on the government to look for Dzamara.
We have set up a particular fund whose details will be released this week, whereby we are offering a reward for anyone who has got essential or particular information regarding the whereabouts of Itai Dzamara, or anyone who might have knowledge of the rumors around where exactly Itai Dzamara could be found. So we've set up in conjunction and in collaboration with other non-government organizations. We have got an interest in making sure that Itai Dzamara is found alive and healthy.
Why have you decided to take this route?
At times, people are afraid of being victimized when they release particular information that is delicate and sensitive, especially to do with the Itai Dzamara. And some people might be fearing losing their jobs, losing their lives, and so forth. We felt that it is important for us to put up a fund which can actually motivate those who might be having information to be able to release that particular information. So it's a motivation that we are putting across so that those who have got the information can also benefit eventually from the release of that particular information. The more he is not being found, the more our fears also grow. So we will motivate further if we do not get any positive result from it.
That was Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Programs Manager Nixon Nyekadzino speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. A spokesperson for the Dzamara family, Patson Dzamara, was not available for comment as his phone was not reachable.
Charles Nyoni of Occupy Africa Unity Square says they welcome the money being offered by Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition.
Yes, currently we are so busy trying by all means to look for Dzamara since the state is not even helping, and we've been waiting for His Excellency Robert Gabriel Mugabe to come back into the country since he's been globetrotting and then tell us what he plans or thinks about the whereabouts of Dzamara since he's the current SADC chair.
We understand that the Crisis Coalition has set up a reward that will be given to anyone who has information that leads to the recovery of Mr. Dzamara. What do you make of that?
Although we as friends and colleagues of Jamara are not going to administer the funds. We would love and appreciate Crisis Coalition to look for the private investigators on their own, engage them on their own, pay them on their own, and oversee the efforts of the investigators in trying to locate the whereabouts of Jamara. Since we are a people's movement, we appreciate all funds and all help and all necessary help that you can get from different quarters of the country of Zimbabwe.
That was Charles Nyoni of Occupy Africa Unity Square speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is in the process of taking the police to court for failing to comply with a high court ruling ordering them to mount a search for Jamara and to regularly report on any progress until he's located.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Tensions are simmering in the ruling ZANU-PF party, with some party hawks now pushing for the arrest of expelled former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and the putting under strict surveillance of her alleged allies in the party. Multiple sources in the Politburo told Studio 7 that reports that Ms. Mujuru and her allies are exploring the possibility of forming a splinter party have rattled ZANU-PF, leading to the unprecedented attack on her and her late husband, General Solomon Mujuru. An explosive report from the party's Politburo is alleging that Ms. Mujuru and her late husband were plotting to eliminate President Robert Mugabe. Ms. Mujuru has constantly refuted these allegations. The late General Mujuru died in a mysterious fire accident. Mujuru's brother Joel told Studio 7 that their family will consult and give a response at the appropriate time. War veteran and former member of the ZANLA High Command, Bernard Manyadza, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the allegations against the Mujurus show desperation in people who have allegedly hijacked the Liberation Party.
Well, there's simply not found anything to stick on to Joyce, the wife of the late general. That's something which is plausible, that's something which is acceptable to the public. And so now they are going out to search anything that may stick to justify their cause. There's been good schemers, right? There's been good schemers to out the Mujuru, but for the causes, they cannot find the causes that can stick.
Do you think they are now laying grounds to even possibly arrest Mrs. Mujuru?
Possibly, but there's no reason to arrest her because they will not find any facts to nail her. But this politicking and making such allegations, probably that the public may accept is what I see possible. But is to find the actual justification for arresting her or probably eliminating her, that may be valid.
But where are these allegations coming from, Mr. Manyadza? Do you know who exactly might be coming with such schemes?
No, not exactly who, but I know my opponents are good at scheming.
But are these allegations of toppling Mr. Mugabe anything new? Is this not what was happening even from the second Chibrenga War?
No, not at all. It started in 1977. The so-called Vashanti Rebellion, the so-called Amaziri Kadena Rebellion, and many other things that happened then up to now. You remember Stokes' case? You remember Joshua Nkomo's case? All wanted to kill him, but for what reason? And who would want to kill an old man who is 91? For what reason? For what purpose? What would one achieve for that?
That was war veteran and former member of the ZANLA High Command, Bernard Manyadza, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Following her expulsion from ZANU-PF, some are now suggesting former Vice President Mujuru should form a political party and stand up to ZANU-PF. But others say if history is anything to go by, Ms. Mujuru's chances of success are very slim. One such skeptic is political analyst Dr. Brilliant Mhlanga.
The first assumption is that Joyce Mujuru has that kind of support that everyone claims she commands. which is a speculative position. And then the second assumption is that she has the capacity, apart from the fact that she may be having that speculated position. The question is whether she has the capacity to actually do all those things and mobilize the people on the ground from the opposition to support her. I think we must understand that there is always this kind of situation when people are dealing with ZANU-PF's internal politics, which is usually based on wishful thinking. The reality on the ground, the reality that we're facing here, is that ZANU has deliberately dangled this gauntlet at Njuru with a view to deal with their succession problem once and for all. So this firing of Njuru was almost imminent, and I think it's a strategy that these ZANU-PF guys have decided to come up with.
What makes you think that it's practically impossible for her to form a political party and officially split ZANU-PF?
There is nothing practically impossible with forming a political party, because everyone can form a political party. But if Njuru is to form a political party, she will still not wrestle power from Kabila.
That was political analyst Brilliant Mhlanga speaking with Studio 7 from England.
Bond coins that were rejected by some local people and other stakeholders soon after they were introduced in Zimbabwe 3 months ago have brought a lot of joy in the country's Chinoy town, Mashonaland West Province, where commuter omnibus fares have gone down by 20 cents. But others say the coins have forced their businesses to shut down in this once productive agricultural region, boasting of extensive tobacco and maize fields. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports from the provincial capital.
This customer calls the Mankombe Towson brought relief to Chinoy residents who used to pay 50 cents a trip from high and low density suburbs to the town's central business district and the surrounding areas. Thanks to the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's move to introduce South African minted bond coins into the money market to facilitate the provision of change in an economy using multiple currencies such as the Chinese yen, American dollar, British pound, South African rand, Botswana pula, and several others. Before the introduction of the bond coins, Kombi operators were failing to give commuters appropriate change, resulting in rounding off fares, a situation that forced the local people to pay a lot of money when traveling to various places in the small town of over 78,000 inhabitants. All sectors of the economy faced the same challenges after the Southern African nation dumped the Zimbabwe dollar and adopted the multi-currency in 2009. Customers started receiving an assortment of goodies such as candy as a form of change in shops, flea markets, and other trading centers. Now this is a thing of the past in Chinoy, especially in the transport sector, as commuter bus fares have gone down from 50 cents to 30 cents a trip following the introduction of the bond coins produced at a cost of $10 million. Customers using the South African currency are now paying 3 rand per trip instead of 5 rand. For informal trader Messi Kamacha, who commutes daily from her house to the town center to conduct her business, the bond coins have brought a lot of joy to Chinoy residents.
We are happy to pay just 3 rand. They were overcharging us. We also thank the coming of bond coins that has eased the change situation.
The bond coins, which have the same value as United States cents, are in denomination of 1, 5, 10, 25, and 50 cents. All this is good news for local omnibus driver Tokmo Chiusaru, who says their challenge now is in meeting profit margins set by Kombi or commuter bus operators.
We are now meeting target at least $50, $60, $70. We are managing to get that amount.
But these coins have, however, become a case for unregistered transport operators who have found it going tough due to stiff competition for scarce and poorly paid customers. The unregistered operators, commonly known in Chinoy as Go Fast or Chirios, say they are now getting low profits following the reduction of commuter fares 3 weeks ago. One of the unregistered drivers who asked to be only identified as Taurai is not happy at all.
Fuel also is not going down, it is up. So they are not even getting any profit from that.
Taurine says some local youth who were engaged in a local rent-to-buy vehicle scheme and operating pirate taxis have been pushed out of business following the introduction of the bond coins.
We had youngsters who had joined the pirating business since they can't get employed by the government. So what it means is all the youngsters who were having vehicles on rent to buy, they're no longer having the vehicles because they can't manage to get the monies which the owners of the vehicle does demand.
Charles too are now crying foul. One of them, who does not want to be named, says they are also struggling to make ends meet due to the reduced commuter bus fares.
The situation is difficult now. You used to get 5 rand per car, but now we are getting only 30 cents.
Some Zimbabweans are still resisting the use of bond coins, saying they were introduced as a way of bringing back the moribund local dollar, which became unusable due to historic hyperinflation, which the US-based Cato Institute estimated that it reached 89.76 trillion% in November 2008. Central Bank Governor John Mangunja and Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa have insisted that the Zimbabwe dollar is not coming back into circulation anytime soon. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Now a look at regional and international news.
Kenyan forces carried out airstrikes against Al-Shabaab targets in neighboring Somalia days after the militants killed 148 people in an attack at a university in southern Kenya. Warplanes hit two camps in the Gedo region of southern Somalia on Sunday.
Pakistan's defense minister says Saudi Arabia has asked Pakistan to provide ground troops, planes and warships to help a coalition battling Iran-backed rebels in Yemen.
Malaysian authorities have arrested 17 people, including two who had recently returned from Syria for allegedly plotting terror attacks in the capital, Kuala Lumpur.
And U.S. President Barack Obama says the framework agreement to curb Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief is the best bet by far to keep Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 919 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
The recent revelations by the former Secretary General Priscilla Msiaira Mbuimushonga of the MDC formation led by Welshman Ngube that she has been diagnosed of clinical depression has left mental health specialists calling for increased awareness of such issues in Zimbabwe. Msiaira Mbuimushonga's recent interview with the Financial Gazette, which quoted her saying her depression resulted from the death of her husband, has been hailed by many as a bold move by one of Zimbabwe's top politicians, as many people do not want to talk about such conditions. This comes at a time when reports indicate that the majority of people facing such health challenges are not accessing health facilities or shy away from them due to the stigma associated with depression and or mental illness.
According to health experts, mental illness is a medical condition that disrupts a person's thinking, feeling, mood, ability to relate to others, and daily functioning. The most common illnesses include anxiety, mood disorders like depression, and eating disorders. For further perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks with Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, and psychiatrist Dr. Sekai Niwatiwa. Niwatiwa says people must not be afraid to confront mental health and be open to get treatment from medical professionals.
As you know, our people don't come to the doctors first. They go
traditional healers, our faith healers and every other healer before they come to the hospital.
And Dr. Bonde, if you can just come in there discussing that issue, are people coming forward to discuss their issues with mental health?
Many people live with subclinical disease without coming forward for treatment for fear of stigmatization, socially, in employment, and the services that are available, especially if we look in our public health, are also very stigmatizing. There is definitely underfinancing and underdevelopment of mental health care in Zimbabwe, which may make people not come forward. And there's very little awareness around diseases such as stress, such as depression, bipolar disorders, and people just don't come up and say, look, I've got stress, I need to be attended by a doctor.
Dr. Niwatiwa, what should someone do if they feel that they might be having an issue with mental health, like depression? What exactly should they do?
We always encourage people to come, coming always good. But sometimes we get people coming to us after 10 years of trying everything and everything else.
And in your profession, what exactly do you do? Can you tell our listeners what happens when they come in to discuss some of these challenges that they find themselves in?
All the habits die very slowly. Our people, as far as mental illness is concerned, people don't think it's medical. They think it's either witchcraft, tokoloshes, dead airs, everything else except that they are mentally ill. It's actually a condition which requires treatment. And when they go to the prophets and all these other people, they always have their own explanation, which makes it very difficult for the people to come to us for help. And when they come for help, if they come to us first, when they are doing well, then when they go to the process, they ask them to stop the medication, and the whole process becomes very difficult.
Dr. Bonde, looking at the social and economic conditions in Zimbabwe, has that have any effect on the issue of mental health? And if so, if someone is diagnosed with, let's say, depression, can they even afford to properly take care of themselves?
Certainly, with the challenging environment that we are living under, economically, it just put a certain level of strain, both on people's ability to seek treatment, and also when people feel that they haven't been able to achieve their goals, that does also bring a feeling of hopelessness and will also compound the incidence of stress in the country. And I know that there was a study which was done which seemed to suggest that, you know, at least one out of every two Zimbabweans has got some kind of a subclinical mental health problem.
And Dr. Niwatiwa, let me end here with you. What is your message to those Zimbabweans who might feel that they are suffering with issues of mental health illness, but then also looking at the challenges that they personally might have? What is your message to them, and how can they seek that assistance?
They should come for treatment at the hospital. Mental illness is treated free in Zimbabwe if you go to the public hospital. So they should come early so that we treat them early. If we treat them early, the outcome is always good.
What about those who are scared or fear that they might find themselves diagnosed?
You know, they shouldn't be afraid. There is treatment for most of the mental conditions.
That was psychiatrist Dr. Sekai Niwatiwa speaking with Studio 7. You also heard from Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. Both were in Harare.
The Minister of Health says Zimbabweans should try their best to clean and treat their drinking water in order to avoid waterborne illnesses. Dr. Portia Manangazira, head of the Epidemiology and Disease Control, says the Minister of Health is fully aware of the prevailing acute water shortages in most urban areas in Zimbabwe. Dr. Manangazira will be talking about this and other issues tomorrow here on Studio 7.
We continue as a ministry to appeal to the local authorities and other players who provide water for particularly the urban populations, to assist and provide the water. But to the communities, because we know that it's a long time in coming, we've been mentioning that from time to time without much movement in terms of availing safe water of the right quantities. So it then translates into all these diarrhea and enteric diseases and a host of other health challenges.
And that was Dr. Portia Manangazira, head of the Epidemiology and Disease Control in the Ministry of Health. Don't miss this interview tomorrow right here on Studio 7.
In our sports news, Zimbabwe football fans were this afternoon treated to one of the West Harare derbies in living memory as they watched the Caps United and Dynamos play mediocre soccer. At the same time, newcomers Dongo Sawmills beat the dust once again and Cholocho Pirates held Wange in their own backyard. Reporter Michael Cariati has more details from Harare.
The two Harare Giants appear to have played their worst ever soccer in living memory, as they could hardly string more than three passes, much to the chagrin of the few football fans. This was worsened by the fact that fans started complaining before the game after Caps United hiked the gate charges to $5 instead of the normal $3 per person. Caps United, however, were the first to find the target through George Miranda, only for Dynamos to equalize through a penalty conversion from Kwasi Amin after Ronald Chitio had been fouled in the box. The draw left Dynamos at the top of the Premier Soccer League table 10 points from 4 games, while Caps United are way down 7 points from 3 games, having failed to fulfill their fixture last Thursday against Aumine due to protests by players over unpaid salaries and allowances. Despite mediocre performance, Dynamo's coach Desmond Gora was happy with the final result.
It was a real derby, so some of my players didn't perform very well today, but I'm happy with the result.
However, Caps United coach Mark Harrison was a disappointed man.
It's a stronger, more tactical, and I think we deserve to win the game.
The other matches ended as follows: Dongo Sawmill 0, Triangle 1, Cholocho Pirates 1, Wange 1, Buffalo 0, Islanders 0, and Chicken Inn 2, Wawa 0. The game between Chapungu and ZPC Kariba had to be called off because of a waterlogged pitch following a heavy downpour yesterday. FC Platinum, who did not play during the Easter holidays due to their commitment in the CAF Confederation Cup, will play Flame Lily on Wednesday. In another football development, the Zimbabwe Football Association are keeping a tight lead on whom they are backing in the race for the FIFA presidential elections coming soon. FIFA spokesperson Tolisani Gwesela refused to reveal FIFA's favorite candidate following a recent visit to Zimbabwe by one of the candidates, Prince Ben Ali Hussein of Jordan. All the candidates are canvassing for African support and are at the CAF Congress that starts tomorrow, hoping to get the crucial African vote. The other candidates are former Portugal and European Footballer of the Year Luis Figo, Michael van Praag of the Netherlands, and sitting president Joseph Sepp Blatter. Gwesela told Studio 7 that the FIFA board has already made the decision on whom to vote for, but made it clear that their vote was their secret. FIFA President Cuthbert Duwe, board member for development John Peary, and chief executive officer Jonathan Mashingaise are at the CAF Congress in Egypt, where Africa will take a position as a bloc. Africa is in the past backed incumbent Blatter, who was first elected into office in 1998. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners about rising tensions in President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party following the expulsion of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening. Let's meet again tomorrow, same time, same station, same frequencies. Chris Gande, good night.